Hey, 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 I want to welcome everybody back to the Freedom Train podcast series, one of your favorite podcasts, or your absolute favorite podcast in the world. I am Joseph Ward, and always joined by the man, whichever way he is on this, Mr. Patrick Irvin with the great background.
Ain't no background, that's real life. We camping out here.
Hey, y'all. He got magic too. He can make the background come alive too. He magic.
But, well, I would show him, but I got on sweatpants, so
I'm not matching either. So, hey man, thank y'all for tuning in again. We appreciate everybody who's been supporting us. We've been seeing an increase of numbers and in increase in engagement. And we really appreciate everybody who has been supporting us. We've actually been seeing an increase across the network. So we want to say congratulations and kudos to all of our podcasters here on the Freedom Train Network. Shelby Davis, Queen Candice, Enigma September, Cliff, Pat, myself. Kudos to all of us for putting out great content and increasing our reach and increasing our numbers. Therefore, we are impacting and affecting more people in a positive light. So shout out to us, give ourselves a pat on the back. But before I get deep, I do want to let you know that the Freedom Train podcast series is brought to you by PACS, Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PACS, Inc. is a Black development organization aimed at developing the Black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit the website at www.pactsinc.org. That way, you can learn more about the organization, how you can become a member, how you can donate. They have a code of conduct that they created for Black America, and implementing this code of conduct will help us work more as a cohesive unit. You can also see how you can get more involved in the organization. They have a Learning Center tab that you can click on, and it has a plethora of resources ranging from audio resources or audio books, political resources, actual books, ebooks, survival guides, legal cases, and educational videos as well. So go ahead and do that. And you can support them by purchasing some of the items in their store, or you can support PACS Inc. through the Amazon Smile program. Amazon has a program where you go to AmazonSmile.com, you register as a member of AmazonSmile.com, you get to pick the organization you want to support. PACTSINC. So you register, do that, bam, you're good. So every time you want to go on Amazon and buy some, AmazonSmile.com, and a portion of your proceeds will go to support a nonprofit like PACS Inc. PACTSINC.org is the website. So go support the people.
Word.
Give them for the people.
Word.
And Becca, step. I know I should know those words, but I don't. So it is what it is. Hey, so we got a good show today. We're actually going to be talking about something that Pat covered 2 years ago on Lessons from the Screen. And there is a link for the Lessons from the Screen video. 3 years ago. Excuse me. 3 years ago. So there will be, or there is a link for that Lessons from the Screen video in the description. So go check that out, as Pat spent that episode of Lessons from the Screen really breaking down the Black wealth thing. But we're going to give it to you again. We're going to revisit it. It's 2021. Where are we? Where's the Black wealth gap? Has it gotten worse? Has it gotten better? Because the idea is by 2053, they expect the average black wealth, they expect it to be zero. In 2053. And with COVID, it could come sooner. So that's an issue. So we're definitely going to dive head first up in that. But what we got first, Pat? What we got?
Well, first up, we got where's Dr. Tip at? Is Dr. Tip around? We got questions for Dr. Tip.
Somebody got a tip question.
Somebody got a tip drill.
Hold on, let me go find my homie. Hold on.
Dr. Tips here. Need some advice to get the tip near. Tilt your head to feel tip for real. Tip and told him, make him tip drill. Dr. Tip is here to help you with all your relationship needs. Send me your questions. He's got answers. You might like him. You might not. He might tell you to be a thot. He might tell you to get some self-respect. He might call you a simp. He might promote simpage. The world never knows. Only Dr. Tip knows. And that's because Dr. Tip is for real. For real.
Back up into his eye 2 weeks in the Rizzo.
You forgot the
Watch your mind. Back up in the place to be. There you go, Dr. T.I.P. on the M.I.C. Ready to give this advice to all you jitterbugs. Get your mind right. You already know how it goes.
All right. And we got a tip drill. So for anybody that have a tip drill, something they want to ask Dr. Tip, definitely hit us up.
But where they hit you up at? Where they submit their questions to?
Man, you can go to the Freedom Train website, freedomtrainradio.com, and hit the contact us and submit your questions that way. Or you can send a direct email to myself, Patrick@freedomtrainradio.com, or to Joe at, well, that's Dr. Tip. That ain't Joe. But send it to Joe at,
yeah, send it,
hey,
to
Dr. Tip, you want your own email?
Yes, I want my own. Matter of fact, because I'm tired of Joe getting my email, because he ain't cool enough to get my email. So I need my own email, Dr. Tip, because Joe can't put the tip in like I can. I'm telling you.
Okay.
He cool,
okay,
but he can't put the tip in like I can.
Okay.
So watch your mind.
We'll let y'all know when that gets set up and Dr. Tip have his email. But for right now, you can send them to me, Patrick@freedomtrainradio.com, or you can send them to Joe. Joe@freedomtrainradio.com. Or you could, like I said, go to the website and hit the contact us and submit your tip drills that way.
You ain't no player if you ain't got your own email. You heard me?
I heard you. That's why I got mine. All three of them.
What we got?
This question comes from a young man, or a man, a man with the moniker of Fuck Your White Feelings.
Say what?
That's his screen name.
So he one of them extra pro black brothers, huh?
Sound like it.
Okay.
Sound like it.
Okay. Okay. What he got? What he got? He got a pro black relationship question.
I bet you.
Somebody want to cut their afro, huh?
I don't think you want to put your money on that one. So his question is, are sex bots a legit alternative now? If your woman ain't acting right, is it cool for you to go and get a sex bot?
Let me clean my glasses. Hold on. Because a player need to make sure I saw and heard that right. Say that one more time for a player.
So the question is, are sex bots alternative now? Sex robots.
Sex robots are a legit alternative if you have taken about 21 L's. And if you're asking that question, that means about 21 women have turned you down, have told you no, told you to skedaddle, stiff-armed you, ran away, hopped off, you know, shot their shot somewhere else, or rejected your shots. That's might what happened, because a player like me ain't never thought about no sex robots. Because look, I'm a real player. Right? I'm a real player. Matter of fact, I'm gonna get a chain. I'm gonna get a chain that say player. What you gonna say?
Okay.
Player, right? So, see, the thing is, what the young man is, you ain't got no game. You ain't got no game. Because when you're thinking about sex robots, that's because your relationships with sex real people or humans ain't working out. So first of all, young man, you might need to change your approach. You get most your people say approach. I say approach, right? You might want to change your approach, because guess what? It ain't working. It really ain't working. So why keep putting peanut butter on the bread if it's going to keep crumbling? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If your taco broke in the middle, don't keep putting the fillings in. You feel me? If it's a hole in the water bottle, it's going to leak out.
Gotcha.
So at some point, you got to change something in what you're doing, right? You see how when you ask that question, I cleaned my glasses?
Right. Yeah.
You want to know why I cleaned my glasses?
Because you can't hear what you can't see.
Say that one more time.
Oh, I'm getting there with you.
Say that.
I'm getting there. You can't hear what you can't see.
You can't hear what your ears can't see, right? Have you ever seen a bumblebee drink Sprite?
I have not. I have not. Not even in the movie Bees.
So what we talk about? Why we talk about sex books? Sex robots, if you've never seen a bumblebee drink Sprite, why we talk about that, right? See,
I don't know.
See, what he need to be, instead of saying F your white feelings, he need to be having effing with real humans. See,
God, ooh, that was bars.
Look, I'm your rapper's favorite rapper, favorite rapper, favorite rapper player. You dig me? You dig me?
Rudy so, Ray more times too. I got you.
Look. There's only one real solution for this. Stop, collaborate, and listen. Because Ice is back with a brand new edition. Because something is rather holding me tightly. I flow like a boat, new daily or nightly.
Mm-hmm. Go Ninja, go Ninja, go.
Who don't understand that?
Who don't? I get it now when you say it like that.
So in conclusion for the young man, look, if bumblebees don't drink Sprite.
You're right.
And the flat tire can't roll.
It can't.
Stop going after women who don't like you.
Oh, okay.
That's it. And guess what? You don't have to do no sex robots if you like who like you, right? That's right. Very like simple. Like who like you. Don't keep climbing the mountain if your fingertips are sore, right? Why try to put on new socks if you haven't clipped your toenails in 3 weeks?
I got you.
So, hey. And the last piece of advice for him is never put deodorant on after a pickup basketball game if you haven't bathed, because you're going to smell like sweat and antidepressants.
So after you play pickup basketball, you bathe first so that you don't smell like sweat and antidepressants.
Yeah.
I got you. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, and then if all else fails, just put some Tussin on it.
Tussin?
Put some Tussin on it if all else fails.
Can you put Tussin on the female?
She can drink the Tussin.
Okay.
Deep. Okay. See how deep that is?
That was deep. Hey. That was deep.
Hey, man, look, I'm only here to help. Watch your mouth. I'm only here to help. Okay.
Yeah, you gave a lot of help just then, Dr. Chuck. I want to thank you for joining us, giving us your illustrious, wonderful, marvelous, amazing advice.
Okay.
I know you just changed this young man's life and any of the other young men out there listening, and even some of the females, I'm sure they would, they got a good idea of what they need to do as well. So I appreciate you.
Ladies, if the man, if he don't know none of the lyrics to the Biggie Smalls song, he ain't the man for you.
Ain't nothing else to say after that, Dr. T.
So with that being said, I appreciate you, Tell Joe. I stole this woman, and I see y'all later. Peace out. Watch your mouth.
Tips here. Need some advice to get the tip near. Tilt your head to feel tip for real. Tip and told them, make them tip drill. Dr. Tip is here to help you with all your relationship needs. Send me your questions. He's got answers. You might like him. You might not. He might tell you to be a thought. He might tell you to get some self-respect. He might call you a simp. He might promote simpage. The world never knows. Only Dr. Tip knows.
Hey, man, Dr. Tip. Your homeboy funny. For real. Your homeboy funny. Why he ain't answer that man question?
He did not.
Why Dr. Tip didn't answer that man question?
He did not. Hey, he said a whole bunch of words, though.
But he dropped them jewels on him. Dr. He did. Shout out to Dr. Tip dropping them jewels on him. Hey, one time, if y'all want relationship issue, remember, for now, even though me and Tip ain't seeing eye to eye right now, Joe@freedomtrainradio.com, and I'll make sure he get the messages. So that's how I go. Okay. Brother, go to the bathroom. Here comes Dr. Tip. That's your homeboy, though. Remember, that's your homeboy.
Nah, man. Why y'all ain't seeing eye to eye right now?
Because he really think he a player. He really believe he a player.
Mm. So he in his heart of hearts.
Yeah, he be coming around trying to. Because Dr. Tip is like 53 years old, even though he don't look like it. So he really, he believes not only that he's a player, but he also believes he's my daddy.
Oh.
Mm. Yeah.
He's not a player. He just crush a lot.
And he's delusional. So, but y'all keep asking him questions so he can change our lives.
Yeah, he give good advice. You know, I heard what he said about the bees and the Sprite. That was
genius. That was genius. You ain't never seen it.
No, I haven't. That's why I said that was like mind chain. Like as soon as he said it, mind blown.
Hey, that's and unfortunately, even though he ain't really supposed to be around here, but that's how I go on the Freedom Train Network, man. Look, no, even the mistakes are life changing.
Mm-hmm.
Already. So let's keep this thing rolling. If you look at social media. And social media is the lens for what we see in the black community. It looks like we're just all over the place through the lens of social media. But it also makes it seem like black wealth is increasing because we have access to more people who are generating larger incomes.
Right.
But there's something called a report that came out in 2017 that Pat covered in 2017. Kudos to Pat, Freedom Train. 2018. Yeah. Okay, the report came out 2017. Pat.
The report came out September 2017, but Lessons from the Screen covered it in January of 2018.
There it is, ahead of the COVID. So the report is called The Road to Zero Wealth, How the Racial Wealth Divide is Hollowing Out America's Middle Class. So, like I said in the opening, the idea is by 2053, black wealth will be zero. Like we will own 0% of the wealth in America. I was skimming through some of the notes earlier, and it was saying as far as black household wealth, it's just 4% of the total household wealth in the U.S.,
Mm-hmm.
So start with you, Pat. Kind of take us into how you found this article and why you decided to talk about this article at the time. What about it made you say, I have to cover this because we need to know this. What's going on in our communities that people may not know about that we need to know about why this article is so important to us?
Well, it kind of... You know, I came into the space I'm in now through business and economics. So even though I don't talk business and economics as much as I used to, it's still something I follow and keep track of with the same level of passion and detail and vigor that I did initially.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember reports that I get notified about on a monthly basis through different alert systems and things on my phone. And at the time, this report came up, and there was a 2016 report by the same group talking about the ever-growing wealth gap. And at the time, I didn't cover that report because the wealth disparity was something that was commonly known. And it was commonly known that it was getting, well, in the circles I was in, it was commonly known that it was getting worse.
Right.
So I didn't really feel the need to cover that report. This report came around in 2017, and just the title of it, The Road to Zero Wealth, I was like, wait a second, who's going to be broke?
Right.
So, you know, I opened it up and, oh, black people going to be broke.
Right.
So, you know, it was, I'm going to be honest, it was just a framing because it really, the report was giving a lot of the same information, but the framing of the information was different. And that's what I was like. Okay, because also in 2017, that was also when you started to see people talking about black people waking up, black people being more successful. That was when Trump, he had been in office or he had just got into office that year. And a lot of people were feeling some type of way about how things were going to go when you had a lot of black business owners and black entrepreneurs talking about how it would at least be a benefit to the black business owners, just that and the third. So there was a lot of narrative shifting.
And, Just for clarity, so a lot of people were saying they may benefit from Trump being in office.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and this, of course, was after he got elected. I just put it in this bucket of, okay, we're trying to find a silver lining here. But there were a lot of people making a lot of statements about how things were different, how mm-hmm. things were shifting, this, that, and the third. And so reading through this report, as well as reading through a lot of the other information I was reading at the time, it was like, no, it's not. There's nothing's changing. You just can see more of it. And then also with social media, you got to keep in mind, right? Like, that's all bullshit, right? Like, everybody, most of the people on social media don't live the lives that they present on social media.
Right.
So I felt like this report, with the title or with the approach, gave us an opportunity to have a realistic conversation about where Black people are economically and the direction we're headed in. And so that was why I covered it. It was just one of those things where it was like, this gives us an opportunity to have a real talk about Black economics and where we are for real. Because mm-hmm. there have been reports, even going back to 2012 with the Finance Consumer Report from the Federal Reserve, was talking about how Black wealth was diminished and it was doing really, really bad. And I think at the time we owned like 3 or 4% of the nation's total wealth. And then in 2015 or 16, or I think it was 14 or 15, the report said we own 2.7% of the nation's wealth, which was a decrease. And then you just saw all of these things saying, nah, Black people, y'all ain't.
Yeah.
But the narrative kept being, look at us, we balling. So it was one of those things where it was kind of like, even if you want to say Black wealth is growing, it's still growing slower than the wealth of everyone else, which still represents the decrease in our ownership.
Well, the question is, so let's explore that. Is Black wealth increasing or is Black income increasing?
Well, according to this report and other reports, and I know you're basing your, you have some newer articles that were written than this report.
Right.
But from everything I've read, income is increasing, but wealth is either stagnating or dropping.
Okay, because that's what I read as well. That because wealth is defined different than income. For just make sure people understand, because your wealth is your assets. Is how like what's the dollar amount that your assets outweigh your liabilities? That's right. Wealth. Income is how much you can bring in, because I can bring in $400,000 a year, but if my expenses are like $500,000 a year, it's going to be hard for me to actually build wealth rather than just bring in a lot of money through income. And so we want people to understand that making, like having a high salary, but having no real assets, if you don't have any assets, you're not building wealth. You just have your income is high, but your wealth is low. Like what's in your savings? What have you invested in? What are things that you put your money in that can increase in value over time, rather than something that you can buy that has no value? That's not right. An investment. It's a liability.
And I put it this way in terms of sports. Income is your offense. Wealth is your defense.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Income is your economic offense. In terms of football, you got the ball, you're driving down the field. You know, you're in control of the scenario for the most part. Wealth is your economic defense. In terms of football, again, you don't have the ball. Somebody, you know, the world is doing other things for you or to you. How strong can you stand? Can you prevent, you know, can you prevent things from falling apart or collapsing? Can you hold a line? You know what I'm saying? So when things are going good, income is what most people are thinking about, because income is regular. It's consistent. It's always coming in regularly.
Right.
But when things are going bad, wealth is going to keep you afloat, you know.
Right.
But I just think about it that way in terms of offense and defense. It keeps it simple for me.
Right. So there's, like I said, the name of the article is The Road to Zero. The Road to Zero, The Road to Zero Wealth, How the Racial Wealth Divide is Hollowing Out America's Middle Class. So
that's one a of the report, first, Joe, not an article.
Excuse me, the report. Excuse that. Excuse that. Sir, I apologize, sir. So one of the first things that stands out is saying it would take 228 years for the average black family to reach the level of wealth white families own today. For the average right. Latino family, matching the wealth of white families would take 84 years.
Which is interesting considering how much they try to link us together.
Like, yeah, they just black and brown, black and black. Because let's just be real, Latinos are not trying to help black people build wealth. Latinos concentrating on their own wealth.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's by and large, it seems like most of them are worried about themselves. So,
you know, that's why when the media tried to spin, like, that's why they had this people of color thing. And it's like, we understand the concept of we're all on the other side. Well, white people don't like none of this. Like, white supremacists don't like none of this, basically. But that doesn't mean that just because white supremacists don't like any of us, that all the groups of color have really made a conscious decision across the board that we're going to link up and operate as people of color. We haven't done that. It's in the media and the people are saying it, but it hasn't really happened. So
no.
This article, the black white wealth gap left black households more vulnerable. It's saying COVID-19 had an impact on black wealth, it's had on wealth across the board, across the world. So we know it had an impact on black wealth, but it also talks about the economy having a K-shaped recovery. Now, I'm not the most versed on the K-shaped recovery, but I know that's not a great recovery. I know that with the K-shaped recovery, they're talking about if you are wealthy, you may have lost some, but you ain't lose too much. But if you're poor, you lost a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's not a K-shaped recovery is not something that happens often. And when it does happen, that's not a great thing. So are you more familiar with the K-shaped recovery?
Yeah, it's basically a recovery where things recover at different rates. And they call it a K-shaped recovery because it looks like a K knocked over. It's somebody real creative looked at it and said, hey, if you turn your head this way, it looks like a K. And everybody was like, oh, shit, it do. Let's call it a K-shaped recovery. But there are a bunch of different types of recoveries. Right. You don't want a K-shaped recovery if you can help it, though, because it's an uneven distribution, redistribution of wealth after economic hardship. So, but yeah, this is not to get too muddled up into that. But yeah, K-shaped recovery in the sense of this is bad.
But that is important for people because we now see an increase of black people who are in the stock market and into the stock market. I don't know why I'm trying to say anything else, but yeah, into stocks, into investing, into all that, into crypto and all that. But Forex, all of that is you still use the same market. You still use the same charts. You still use the same everything. And a lot of people may not understand the full jargon or the full breadth of what's going on. So reading is important because if you really don't understand how the K-shaped recovery impacts us negatively, then you might not understand a lot of other things going down the line. You may be investing your money all willy-nilly and your actual wealth is not increasing, but you literally out here gambling now because you don't understand what you're putting your money into because you're not taking the time to research. Absolutely. Like really read. To really read. Like I got a couple stocks. I'm waiting on two stocks that have 5% dividend yield to get down to my price. Get on down to my price. Because we got a lot of people investing, they're over trading, they're over investing. They have a list full of a portfolio full of stocks. They're jumping in stocks at the wrong time, because a lot of us, we understand that we're behind, and in trying to close the wealth gap, we're damaging ourselves or hurting ourselves because we're just jumping out doing things and not necessarily doing it from a more research or informative based perspective, rather than being impulsive and being in your feelings. Because building wealth, you gotta take your feelings out of building wealth.
Yeah, we trying too hard, essentially. Right. And anybody that's played any sports that really try to do anything understands that when you start trying too hard, you start fucking up.
Right.
So, but yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You good?
No, I was gonna say, but one thing that's interesting here is the report does say that if things continue the way that they were, and this, we gotta remember, this was written in 2016. If things continue the way they were, it would take black people 228 years to reach the current levels of white people then.
Right.
This is pre-pandemic.
Right. Right.
The pandemic fucked us up bad.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. So, I pulled up an article like the black-white wealth gap left black households more vulnerable. And this is looking at what black wealth is for 2020, because that was last year. So for 2020, and it's saying, and you know, based off of 2019 stuff going into 2020, it's saying in 2019, the median white household held $188,200 in wealth, 7.8 times that of typical black household of 24,100. It is worth noting that levels of average wealth, which are more heavily skewed by households with the greatest amounts of wealth, are higher. White households reported average wealth of $983,400, which is 6.9 times that of black households at $142,500. The median wealth is more reflective of the typical household. The scale of average wealth is indicative of the outsized levels of wealth held by the richest households. We're way behind. It said black households ranging from a gap of 106,900 in 1992 to 185,400 in 2007, both adjusted for inflation in 2019. So the gap is getting wider. The wealth gap is getting wider. That's why I don't want people to get it twisted off of what we're seeing from social media, because people's individual building of wealth at a small percentage, even a percentage that's less than 1%, is not really going to impact the overall wealth of America, of Black America, like that. So let's not get all twisted. And we can celebrate individuals, but we need to start really concentrating more on the whole of us. Like, how do we build our total wealth? Because we're going to need it. As a group, we're going to need it. That was the whole purpose of slavery and racism, is to build wealth. And the whole purpose of white supremacy and white domination is to maintain it. So one of the things in being able to combat white supremacy or racism is building group wealth, individual wealth, but also group wealth. We have to reinvest that money back into our communities.
Right. And I think one of the things that I've always kind of talked about, going back to 2012, when the Bureau of Labor and Statistics put out their report on income disparities amongst black people, or amongst households, black households, or households in general across America. I'm trying to get it right off memory. Was that in that report, high income, meaning those, from my perspective, those in the fourth and fifth quintiles, because they break things up in the quintiles, so sections of five. So those earners making the top fifth, and those earners in the top two fifths or higher, for black people, that number started at $66,000 a year, I believe it was, or higher. So if you made $70,000 a year or more in 2017, or 2012, I'm sorry, then you were in the top two quintiles of black earners. Now, for white earners, in order to get into the top two quintiles of those of white earners, you needed to be making, I believe the number was somewhere over $100,000, like well over. I believe it was like $150,000. So even when you're talking like what level of income you have in terms of comparing black and white, a high income black person is in most situations a middle income white person. And so we got to think about all of these terms differently. We got to think about spending differently. Yeah.
Go ahead. No, but that's real, because really wrapping our minds around the difference between building wealth and generating income. Because like you're saying, if the middle class were defined by wealth rather than income, black and Latino families in the middle income quintile would need to earn 2 to 3 times as much as white families in order to enter the middle class. If we were to define the middle class in terms of wealth, households would need to own between $68,000 and $204,000 in wealth to qualify for middle class.
And that's how many of us earn that? Right. The vast majority of black people don't meet those criteria.
Right. And say, under these terms, only black and Latino households have the highest income quintile. Those earning more than $104,509 would qualify for middle class status or higher compared to white households in the top 3 income quintiles who already own wealth in excess of this threshold. In fact, the only black and Latino households who have advanced degrees have enough wealth to be considered middle class, whereas all white households with a high school diploma or higher would be considered middle class.
And this is where we get into this discussion of personal choice, personal responsibility versus social responsibility, because a lot of people say, well, if you make better choices, then you would end up in a better situation. And what a lot of these reports, even back in 2017, when this report came out that I would detail, one of the things that it showcased was it's beyond just making good choices. A single parent household, a white single parent household, has more wealth than a 2-parent black household. A white high school dropout has more wealth than a black college graduate. This is not just about making better choices. This is about a society that's been set up to move wealth in the direction that is being moved. So I wanted to harp on that, because when you start talking about college degrees and or educational attainment, when you start talking about professional attainment, when you start talking about relationship status, married or single, all of these other things, people say, well, those are personal decisions. When we're talking about wealth in terms of these things, the system that's been set up, the social structure of America, supersedes all of those personal decisions. It doesn't matter. I have degrees. My wife has degrees. And a white high school dropout, statistically speaking, probably still has more wealth than both of us combined, our household combined.
Because wealth, once again, wealth is not income. Wealth is assets being able to be passed down from generation to generation. And so,
that's it.
So, when did a good number of black households really start generating wealth? Like, when did that start happening? Because think about we only have about, 6 black billionaires in the world? 6 or 7 black billionaires in the world?
Well,
something like that?
I know in turn, it might be 10 or so, but it's not a lot. But I know in terms of black Americans, in terms of black Americans, we got, 2 or 3? And even with that, one of them is not married, and we don't know where her wealth is going to go. The other one of the other ones is married to a white woman, and if she outlives him, his wealth is going to go to her.
It's going to transfer out of the community. Do they have children?
Right. I'm not sure, but even with that, how do the kids identify? And then I think the other one, because there is another one, is married to a white woman as well. So, same scenario. And so, again, when we just start talking about aggregate wealth, not even getting into the politics or the social issues of who you choose to marry and blah, that's neither here nor there. We're just talking about wealth being present in the community. those people, those Black Americans that have crossed the billionaire threshold, when they pass, that's billions of dollars that's going to lead the community potentially just off their passing. So it's another one of them things where we got to, you know, we got to be thinking about it differently.
Yeah. Yeah. Even like if it's true that Kanye West is now a billionaire, him being married to Kim Kardashian would transfer the wealth outside of the community. Same with like a Michael Jordan, it would be transferred outside of the community. So, people have to understand that. Like, marriage is also a business decision. So, you know.
Absolutely.
Understanding that.
We kind of, in this modern age, we kind of, I blame Disney. We very much romanticize marriage. Not that there's anything wrong with getting married for love. Obviously, there's not.
But that shouldn't be your ultimate reason.
Right. Marriage is also a social, a political, and a cultural decision and statement. You know what I'm saying? You are, by and large, identified by and defined by who you choose to pair bond with.
Right.
So this is why we keep having these conversations about, can somebody that dates or marries outside of their race be pro-Black? That conversation stems from the social, political, and cultural attachments people have to who you choose to pair bond with. So, that also becomes a part of the equation when we're talking about wealth, because pair bonding is a major way of wealth transference. You know, right. a lot of the, like you said, passing stuff down, a lot of wealthy white people, a lot of wealthy families remain wealthy because they have houses that they can pass down to their children. Yeah. Imagine the head start you have when you don't have to put out $100,000+ for a house.
Well, also, marriage has traditionally and historically, marriage has had a dowry on it, or people would marry families to increase wealth.
Right.
And or to secure wealth.
Right.
And so it's always been, marriage has always been surrounded with wealth and building wealth and maintaining wealth. And so, like you say, I do agree, we've romanticized the hell out of marriage. And so people like love, 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 love. We ain't saying don't love. We ain't saying love ain't important. But marriage has always been about wealth. Let's just be real. Like, nobody wants to, like, back in the days, nobody was marrying kingdoms to become poor. Nobody was marrying kingdoms to stay stagnant at income levels. They were marrying kingdoms to increase the wealth and security. So,
yeah, I mean, it goes back to this, right? Like, and this is kind of off topic, but since we're here, and I'll bring it right back, but if you're going to be telling people to marry for love, you got to define love and teach them how to do that. You know what I'm saying? And that's missing as well. Like, nobody's defining what love is, and nobody's teaching people how to remain in a committed relationship after that spark has burned off and that passion has died down. And now you're like, my relationship's boring, or my relationship's this, or my relationship, because you were riding on this wave of just excitement about a newfound addiction, and now that you didn't got so many hits of your drug of choice, your person of choice, you're not addicted no more. Like, what do you do now? You know, for a lot of people, they move on, or they, right. you know, they find whatever. But you know, to take it back to, because and I do feel justified in harping on relationships, because like you said, relationships are a big part of building wealth. It's a huge part of building wealth.
Well, think about it. when you read the books about the billionaires and wealthy people in this country around the world, especially the men. One of the constants I've heard from the men is, the woman you choose will help or hurt the empire you're trying to build. And the men, a lot of successful men are successful because they chose the right woman, who she was an asset to him building his wealth. She brought something to the table. So it goes into it. So
yeah, absolutely.
So let's read this. It's this is saying The accelerated decline in wealth over the past 30 years has left many Black and Latino families unable to reach the middle class. I'm going to read that again. The accelerated decline in wealth over the past 30 years. And the reason why I'm hitting on that, because we often talk about progress, 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 progress. And people like to say that Black people have had such great progress over the years. And, you know, you and I have always had the show and ask the questions, is that, are we talking about Black progress or white progress? But also, are we talking about moral victories or tangible victories or tangible things that we could progress, or moral things that we're progressing from? Because I think a lot of times when people talk about progress, they talk about it in terms of moral ground versus tangible things that's actually really helping the race of Black people increase in wealth and security and land and things that we would need to be stable and to sustain ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it said between 1983 and 2013, the wealth of median Black and Latino households decreased by 75% between 83 and 2013. That's crazy. That's my lifetime. That's in my lifetime, from 6,800 mm-hmm. to 1,700, and 50% for the Latino household of 4,000 to 2,000, respectively. And when median white household wealth rose by 14% from 102,200 to 116,800. If current trends continue, by 2020, median Black and Latino households stand to lose nearly 18 to 20% respectively of the wealth they held in 2013. In that same time frame, median white household wealth will see an increase of 3%. Put differently, in just under 4 years now, median white households are projected to own 86 and 68 times more wealth than Black and Latino households respectively.
And to put into perspective the scope that COVID-19 had on projections, I can't find the report, but I will. But I'm putting it out that I can't find the report just in case I'm wrong. But I do remember reading that wealth, white wealth at this moment in time, white people had 100 times more wealth than Black people in America. And so the report, the projection you just gave said it was supposed to be, what, 85 times?
Yeah, 86%.
And, you know, we're sitting at 100 times right now. And so that's where when you're talking about median wealth. And so that's when you run back into this scenario of things aren't getting better. And COVID was a hit. And a lot of the gains that we made post civil rights movement were erased in 2008 with the Great Recession.
Right. People not understanding that. Like, economics is very, 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 very important for a group of people to be able to sustain themselves and take care of themselves. It's not about morality all the damn time. Because, I was scrolling through Instagram and young lady had a post about Dr. King. And Dr. King was basically talking about how he had an illusion of what white America was going to be, and he had to walk that back. You know, going back to when he's saying he basically led his people into a burning building, and he learned mm-hmm. that this is not where we really want to be, because white people wasn't trying to help us. White people were further feeding off of us and using us. And right. So what confuses me is you can find that clip of Dr. King talking about how trying to integrate into white society hurt us. He's saying this out of his mouth from something he was trying to do. And he was man enough to take accountability to say, hey, I was a part of this, but this ain't working. So we need to do for self. We need to do other things. Dr. King is telling you that, but people will still quote early quotes of Dr. King saying we need to do this and we need that. We need to work together. All this one, all this one. Dr. King is telling you, hey, we tried this. It didn't work back then. It's not working now, and it's still not working, but we still keep doing the same thing over and over and over, and it's not helping us. So, go ahead. Yeah. My bad. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
So my question is, because I want to, before we close this out, I don't just want to hit up on the problem. What are some solutions economically? What are things black people can do for ourselves so we can help close this wealth disparity and not have our wealth totally go to zero by 2053?
Group economics is a cliched answer that requires probably a show on its own to explain it the way it needs to be explained. But the way I've always looked at it as black people need to understand this concept of aggregate wealth.
Right.
And we need to really understand the concept of teamwork, not unity, not uniformity, not all of these other terms that are cute. Just basic teamwork. On a team, I don't have to like you. We don't have to hang out. We ain't got to be best friends. But when it's time to get the job done, we understand that we both got a job to do. And it's important for both of us to do that job in order for us to be successful. I think black economic teamwork needs to be taught, drilled, and inculcated and beat on and everything else. Black business owners need to start working together. Black patrons, black consumers need to start actually consuming from black business owners. And that also requires them to understand a basic concept of economies of scale. A lot of the times the black business owner can't give you the discount you can get from the white person because they don't have enough money flowing through to be able to procure them those savings for themselves.
But it's an easy fix to that. Go into the black businesses with that same attitude. You're going to the Gucci and Louis store knowing they won't give you no discount. Going to the black businesses with that same attitude.
Yeah, but then you start talking about product social impact and all of these other things that deal more with the perceived value versus the real value. You know, and that's a conversation that I don't know that many black folk, even if they understand it, are emotionally ready to make the change on.
But it's like that video you shared in the group chat earlier of the guy. He saw his homeboy selling stuff and he's like, "Hey, man, I support you, bro. I support you. I'm not going to buy your stuff or take your car, but I support you." Walk five steps down the road and see somebody he don't know who's selling the products three times higher. Brought multiple products and took the car after telling his homeboy, "I don't have no money and I can't take your car." So
yeah,
the fact, like we said earlier, the fact that we can make that skit as black people as a joke, and we all know that that happens to us. We all know we do that to each other and we still do it. And we still do it. We know that's what we do because we making jokes about it. We talk about it and we still do it. What the hell is wrong with us?
Yeah, and for those of you that are interested in the skit, it's a RDC World skit. They're well known for their LeBron James skits, but they do more than the LeBron James skits. And I'm sure most of the people that's watching this know who they are, but they had a skit where it was about, you know, how people be when their friends have a business, how friends support friends. And so, you know, it was just like Joe described. Guy was selling some product, some cream and some hair ointment. Told him he'd give him a hometown discount, sell him for $10. He said no. He said, "Can you take a business card?" He didn't take the business card. Like Joe said, he walked literally five steps. And there was this other dude he didn't know selling the same product for $30, whereas his homeboy was selling it for $10. He gave him a $100 bill, told him to keep the change, took multiple business cards, and said he loved supporting people as he left wearing a shirt that said friends on it.
Right. And his homeboy like, bruh.
Right. His homeboy is in the background with the sad face, with the Snoopy face. You know what I'm saying? And we, like Joe said, it's something we joke about all the time in business circles. Joe will tell you directly. I told Joe plenty of times, I don't even share what I got going on with a lot of my quote-unquote friends and family because I already know they're not going to support it. Like, so yeah. I don't even waste my time. But I also, a lot of these people that call me friend, I don't call them friend because real friends support each other. So, but you do hear a lot of people, like, this is one of the most common complaints I see as a business consultant and as people, as a person that's in a lot of business circles. That complaint has never gone anywhere, and it's still there, and it's still just as prevalent nowadays. And, like, you're right, Joe, you're 100% right. That's retarded. Like, we got to stop that shit.
Straight up. Hey, so, all right, so, and furthering the conversation about solutions, I believe in saving your money, wisely investing your money, putting your money in assets that you've studied that have a history of growth that can bring you wealth over time. We know crypto is going to be the wave of the future. So that's learn. What that's what they say. You don't believe it?
Nah, I think it will. I just don't know that it will in the capacity that people are looking at it now. I think crypto, I think blockchain is going to evolve into something else. I do think there's money in investing in blockchain. Crypto, I'm not sure about how crypto is going to function as a currency. But I think there's value in learning about it. And there's value right now, obviously, in investing in it. If you know, if you're cautious and you do your research, like you always saying.
But I would say this, if somebody is interested in, and I'm always saying this is based off my knowledge of crypto. So right. I would say don't shy away from it, but wisely do your research before you start to put money absolutely. In it. But start off with a small percentage of your, it should make it a small percentage of your portfolio. And as your knowledge increases, you can increase if you want to, once your knowledge increases, but it doesn't hurt to have that in your portfolio. It's not going to hurt you.
No, I mean, but the key thing with your portfolio anyways is you should be willing to lose everything in there. So, I mean, if you operate on that principle, the reason I harp on teamwork, and like I agree with all of the advice you're giving, the reason why I go back to group economics, though, is because I really feel like we got to do things differently as a collective. If we're talking about aggregate black wealth, if we're talking about individual black wealth, yeah, do all of those things. But if we're talking about communal black wealth, there has to be some community-based changes into how we manage our resources. And I'm not just talking about money. I'm talking about all of our resources.
Well, you know, Dr. Clyde Anderson, he laid it out in the Powernomics book. I mean, when that book came out in the 70s?
Yeah.
And we've said it before. That man been saying what everybody's, a lot of the stuff people are saying now, that man been saying since the 70s.
Yeah, he ain't changed his message in decades. I don't even think he's changed the words to the speeches.
He didn't have to. That's the problem. But we just, right. But we told y'all there was a decrease in black wealth over the past 30 years. So we ain't been listening.
Right. Well,
now, there are other factors. There are other factors, but us not listening made us more vulnerable to those factors as well.
And here, I'm gonna go right down through the numbers, because this was also in that report in 2017. Median household wealth for the black community in 1983 was $6,800. For Latinos, it was $4,000. For whites, it was $102,000. In 2013, for blacks, it was $1,700. So we went from $6,800 to $1,700. For Latinos, it was $2,000.
Hold up. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Read that again so people can make sure they can soak that up in their soul.
So me, and I'm not even going to read the Latino thing. I'm just going to read the white thing, because that's, we like using white people as the standard. So median household wealth in 1983 for blacks was $6,800. For whites, it was $102,000. Median household wealth in 2013 for blacks was $1,700. For whites, it was $116,000. Really 117 if we're rounding up, but okay. Median household income wealth, and this was a projection in the report, for blacks was 1,400. For whites, it was 120,000. And I know I can't find the report, so I'm not going to spit out a number right now. But the projection, this projection was actually a little bit off with COVID kicked in. And we'll get more numbers on that as time moves, as we move further into 2021. Right. We'll really be able to see those numbers. But the projections in this report anyways was black wealth in 2024, household wealth was going to be $1,233. Understand how small that is. $1,233 is less than some people's paycheck. That means that for a lot of people, your bank account is actually in the negatives.
Like poverty is real. I keep telling people the majority of the United States is not metropolitan areas. It's
not
regular down home, small town America and
rural country places.
To understand that people are literally living off $1,200 a month. That's crazy.
And this is their wealth, right? So this is their savings and other assets. $1,200. A lot of that is probably the car that they have. The extremely depreciated car that they have is probably the bulk of that $1,200. Then you probably got, you know, maybe a mandatory insurance plan or mm-hmm. something like that. You
but
know,
it's also a liability.
Right. But I'm like, think about this. Like, if you make $1,200 a month, you make $24,000 a year, right? That's before taxes. The median wealth, the savings that you have in your bank account at $1,200, if your savings is $1,200 and you make more than $2,400 or $24,000 a year, you're in the negatives in your bank account a lot of the time. Like, that's what that says to me. Your account is always, and that's something else we make jokes about all the time, right? I went to the ATM to try to get some money out, and the ATM told me, nigga, you don't deserve an ATM card. I'm going to just keep your shit.
That's not funny. It's not fun.
And everybody like, yeah, that shit happened to me just last week, dog.
Jay-Z said it. Being broke is childish, and I'm quite grown.
But you know, that's where I said we got the mentality. And I do believe that people that are really in poverty, because there have been a number of reports, the Black Labor and Statistics report was one of them, that details how people that are really in poverty really are spending the vast majority of their money on necessities, housing, food, things like that. Right. The problem is those people with just a smidgen of disposable income and above.
That was the ones who just throwing money away.
Right. And those are the ones whose mentality we got to change, because a broke person, after they pay their rent and their utilities, they ain't got nothing to splurge on.
Because you may, like you said, you may be earning over the poverty line, but you're still not building wealth at the same time.
Right.
So you're still in survival mode. And if you're not building wealth, then you really ain't talking about that. We have to build individual wealth, and we have to build group wealth. We have to invest in each other and support each other and buy from each other and reinvest our money into each other, like Pat keeps saying. And if we're not doing that, throw the whole wealth conversations out the window. Stop talking about it, because it's not going to happen. You can't manifest things if you're not putting action toward it. You can't keep sitting down there talking about it because there are buzzwords and it sounds cute. There are outlets and there's information out there that can help people learn how to build wealth. We're gonna make sure a link to all these articles is in the description. We're gonna make sure it's in the link to all the articles in the description, so you can read these articles that we pulled information from. So you won't think we're just pulling the stuff out of our asses. So you can see the things. But it's so imperative. We have to stop foolishly spending money. We have to stop trying to look the part and make sure we build ourselves up. Like, it's crazy that you can have somebody making $50,000, $70,000 a year who will go out and get a BMW, but you have billionaires who drive Priuses.
Hey, man. And that's another conversation, too. The Millionaire Next Door talks about that very well. But I mean, the fact that I'm not, look, I keep it simple when I'm thinking about wealth. If my bank account is not growing, I'm doing something wrong. And it's just that simple. If you regularly in the negatives, if being in the negatives is a part of your regular economic routine, you're living outside of your means.
And I can say that because I was living like that for a while. I was spending more money than I was making, and I was constantly in the negatives. But my man Sam Carter said something that I never forgot. The only way to get out of a ditch is to stop digging.
Hey.
So at some point I said, man, you know what? I'm tired of being in the red. I'm tired of this continuous cycle. I'm tired of going to the cash advance place. I'm tired of borrowing. I'm tired of doing all these things. I'm tired of being like Dr. Lynn Richardson said, I'm tired of living check to Monday. I get paid Friday and I'm broke Monday. I had to stop that. It feels so good to be able to have extra money to invest with and save and just watch it grow. Yeah. Like, that feels amazing. So we just encourage people to do what you can to get yourself out of that cycle, out of that rat race of cycle of constantly being in the negative, so you can get into the positive and grow your money and grow your wealth. And we're going to have more conversations about Black wealth. We're going to have more conversations about building wealth. We want more people on our platform to further the conversation. We don't know it all. So we know there are other people out who know stuff that we don't know. So we were inviting people on so we could talk more about it. But go check out like the Earn Your Leisure platform talking about building wealth. Go check out Anthony O'Neill's platform on YouTube talking about building wealth. Dr. Claude Anderson is always talking about it. He has a channel on YouTube. Even though you check out Boyce Watkins, he's talking about it as well. The Budget Nista, check her out. She's talking about building wealth. The Come Up Series YouTube channel, check that out. We're talking about building wealth. Look, that's what it is. Those are the ones that first come to mind. There are a whole lot of others, and I know most of the time they're like, you shouting out the podcast. Look, man, this is bigger than us. I know some other people, but this is bigger than us. We just told you 2053, they're expecting Black wealth to be zero. We need to get all the information we can get. So everybody I just said, go check them out, support them, and learn from them. God damn it, because we need to fix our situation.
Hey, man, people got to stop being selfish. That's, again, teamwork. People can listen to more than one podcast at once.
Yeah.
I listen to a few of them, and I'm not even a big podcast listener. I mean, like, I don't understand. Even with artists that make music, people can buy your CD and somebody else's CD at the same time. Like, people can watch your YouTube channel and somebody else's. Like, I don't understand that whole, I don't want to give nobody else no shine on my platform. Like, but that's another one of those aggregate type. That's got to change if we're going to turn these numbers around.
Look, I'm built different. If I like it, I'm going to tell other people to check it out. So that's how I roll. So. All right. So with that being said, we're about to shut this thing down. With that being said, I'm Joseph Ward. He's Patrick Irvin. You got any final thoughts or parting shots for this episode?
I'm tired, boss.
He's tired. Hey, I'm tired too, but let's get our money right. Let's get our mind right. And racism is a team sport. Let's start to play as a team and operate as a team and think as a team. If not, we're going to continue to lose as a team because it ain't slowing down. Racism ain't slowing down. So with that being said, we out of here. Peace out and shout out to Dr. Tip.